Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. He will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I'm going to play football.
I'm coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Welcome back, and you finally got a win in 2018. Good job, Pittsburgh Steelers, a 30-27 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Tampa, Florida last night. And I tell you what, I'm feeling good being off of the schneid. Welcome to the Steeler Hangover, brought to you by BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. I am Brian Anthony Davis. With me, as always, is my good friend, Tony DeFeo, and we are ready to roll and talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers' first win of the 2018 season. Before we get started, the show is sponsored by Frank Walker Law, the top criminal defense firm to call in Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and home to one of the nation's top 100 ranked trial attorneys in Frank Walker. Well, friends, lots of great things to talk about tonight. You know, it's great to know that we had a day to digest this win. It started off great, 30-10 at halftime. Then all of a sudden, the Buccaneers started climbing back. Fitzmagic started to bubble, and you thought, oh no, here we go again. But the Pittsburgh Steelers pulled it off. Tony, how are you feeling after this big win to start the season?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me as always. Feeling pretty good. Pretty good. This time of year, I think it doesn't matter how you get the wins. You just have to get a win. And I thought overall it was a pretty good performance by both the offense and the defense. It wasn't all good on both sides, but after 0-1-1, we'll take it.
Yes, we definitely will take it, Tony. So once again, this is our first year back after last year. We took a year off from the hangover, and we did the post-game show last year. And now we are going to go ahead and do the hangover. It gives you a chance to digest the game and to think about it all day. And I know the last 2 weeks with the tie, with the loss, you know, there was a lot of digesting. So there's a lot more celebrating going on this week. And we definitely want to hear from our friends out there in Radio Land. So Blog Land or Blog Talk Land or whatever you want to call it. So we are looking at this number to call, 347-850-8581. We definitely want to hear from you. We'll take your brief comments and we'll chat. So, Tony, let's get right into it. What's your immediate reaction following this game?
Well, I thought that the defense really surprised me how it played early on in the first half with the four takeaways. And when was the last time a Steelers defense had four takeaways in the game? It was like a dream come true because I've been wanting them to be an opportunistic defense for years. So for them to four turnovers in a row and really set the tone for the game and allow the offense to build a 20-point lead, I think that was tremendous. And you know, Big Ben, what more can you say about him? He's just 36 years old, still nimble in the pocket. That play he made at the end of the game, thrown across his body to Juju after getting out of a look like it would be a sack, and then setting up James Conner's run at the end there. It was just, it wasn't pretty. A lot of penalties again. And big plays given up by Artie and sense of ball. And you know, you don't like to see that, but you do like to see what Joe Hayden provided with the steadying presence back there. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
Well, that's fantastic. Here's the thing. You know, they typically say it takes a good four games to know the shape of your team. And we're going to know the shape of the team even more coming up in another week when you're facing an arch rival at home in prime time, the Baltimore Ravens. So once a quarter of the season is in the books, we're going to know so much more where this team is shaping up. But we can see it happening already. And right now, we're seeing Ben Roethlisberger as the clear leader of this team, that he is the most indispensable player on this team right now at this moment. And we're seeing what is happening when he is in the lineup. And with the way the defense is playing, there was some improvement yesterday, but it's, of course, not where we want it to be. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into the grades. But we're seeing that he is going to need to have games like this all season long if the defense continues to play like this and if they're going to make the playoffs. So lots of stuff to talk about, Tony, but you know what? It's great to see our phones lighting up. So we're going to go to the phones already, go a little bit early. 347-605, you are on the line. Welcome to The Hangover. Tell us what's on your mind.
What's up, y'all? This is Ken from New Jersey. How are you?
Ken, it's been a year, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing a lot better, you know, today than the last couple of weeks. So doing great. Happy to be back. And I was looking out for, you know, for the show, so I'm glad I caught you.
Well, great. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. Like, it's definitely great to get the win. I mean, my takeaway was, okay, you know, we'll always find something to complain about as Steelers fans. You know, we are spoiled. We have what they call them, high-class problems, or, you know, like, so we'll always have something to complain about. But my takeaway is, yes, Ben is going to have to continue to be this Ben. So I think with Bell out, it's interesting. Ben would always get docked in MVP voting because how great Bell was and how great Antonio Brown was. Without Bell, and Brown is being, you know, kind of bracketed, and he's not putting up those big numbers, I think this season is going to really highlight Ben Roethlisberger's greatness, and it's really going to showcase how important he is and how he really is the straw that stirs the drink rather than the other way around. And I think that's good because it's going to allow other people to shine when he will just dump it off to Bell. He's forced to look at other options like a Vance McDonald, like a Jesse James, like a James Washington, you know, rather than just going to Bell all the time and Brown and force feeding it down Brown's throat. So that's one thing. And on the defensive side, you know, as bad as this defense is, I think we saw some flashes in spurts of what it could be. What we want is for it to be consistent, and they're just not doing that. And I want to take listeners back to, like, 2011, 2012, 2013, and 14. The Steelers' defense was old and slow. So would you rather the defense be old and slow or young, athletic, and undisciplined? And I just really want people to think about that because we forget this defense was old and slow and everyone was calling for Dick LeBeau's head and they need to draft new people and, like, all of that stuff. We forgot about that. So we have a young core. They're learning on the fly. The bullets are flying live, and this is going to happen. But if they grow up together and, you know, by the end of the season, we could be a pretty good defense. So those are my thoughts from the game.
Well, great. Now let me ask you this, Ken. What do you think is the biggest weakness on defense? You can say a player, or you could go ahead and say a position unit. I think it changes every week. But where do you think it is right now?
I really think the biggest weakness, it's still the middle linebacker. As much as Bosic had a good game, but we don't have that rangy middle linebacker to cover that ground for the deep middle of the field. And it would have helped last night if Morgan Burnett was in there, you know, to be in more sub-package football. But it's that middle linebacker. Obviously, Artie is not playing well. I don't even know if he's regressed. He just was never, you know, he's never really peaked to where we thought he would be. So, yeah, you could say corner two. But, like, that middle linebacker position, we got to figure that out. And we might have to scheme it.
Tony, what do you think about that?
I agree. I think the middle of the field's been exposed all season for the first three games. But I think the encouraging thing about last night, and at least in my opinion, was the way Bostic played, and I think he was pretty active. And I think Edmonds for filling in as a third rookie starter, I think he did pretty good, and he got that pick, and you know he put on the Jets that I didn't even realize he had. So maybe he can be the remedy down the road. You know, if you work him in more and more as the season progresses, maybe he could be that the guy that they thought he could be as far as being able to compensate for the loss of Shazier and that lack of athleticism in the middle.
I agree with that completely. Ken, thanks as always. We appreciate you, and we can't wait to hear more from you this season, buddy.
All right, guys. Thank you.
See you again.
All right. Take care, buddy. You know, I like Ken's assessment, and Ken from Jersey has been a mainstay on our show for the last year, and I always really appreciate what he has to say. I agree with him to a point with the linebackers. I actually think that situation's getting a little bit better, but my biggest problem with the linebackers is not the players as much as it is the scheming. I'm not liking having T.J. Watt back in coverage, especially on deeper patterns as much. That's something that I think is really taking away a lot of his ability. We saw what he did when they schemed for him to be pass rushing against Cleveland. I think that's where he's really going to excel in. But as far as everything goes, where Ken was mentioning the secondary, Artie Burns and Cody Sensabaugh, that tandem, I'm not sure. I think that's the big weakness. He hit it on the head. I don't know if Artie ever got to the place where any of us wanted him. Even himself wanted him as a first-round pick. And I'm wondering, and I'm going to ask you this, Tony, is it hindering him, tuning him with Cody Sensabaugh, or is that better? Because I don't think any of them were better, but does he need more time in there during a game, or do we have to keep that platoon going? But that's the biggest problem to me. What do you think, Tony?
I didn't like the fact that they platoon Burns, because I think he's one of those, and we talked about this 2 weeks ago with his little scrum with Jarvis Landry. He seems like the kind of young guy that, you know, once something gets in his head and he starts second guessing himself and he gets emotional, I think it affects his play. I mean, we've seen him before in the past have really good games where you don't even mention him. He shuts the other guy down. And now we see two games in a row where he's letting the receivers get behind him. And I think he's second guessing himself too much. And I think he's looking over his shoulder, you know, at a guy like Cody Sensabaugh, wondering, you know, if the next mistake is going to send him to the bench. So I think he's the kind of guy that should probably just be left out there to take his lumps, because let's be honest, something like Cody Sensabaugh, he's an okay guy. He's a journeyman, but he's not somebody. I mean, I figured if they would replace him with anybody, it would be Cam Sutton. I was wondering if Sensabaugh would even make the team this year. So I think he should just, for now, being if what you have behind him, just let him stay in there and take his lumps, unless it becomes so obvious that he can't get the job. Then maybe you make a platoon move or a permanent move with somebody else taking his place, Brian.
Okay, well let's stay with the defense. We need to do our grades, but let's go ahead and grade the defense first. That performance yesterday, you know, they started off, like you said, they were getting turnovers. They, for the first time, they won the turnover battle,
and we had a pick six. We haven't had that before. I thought they were tackling so much better, Tony. I was really impressed with Burns, you know, first forcing the fumble. I liked the fact that they were going ahead and, you know, they were pass rushing, causing more opportunities. I mean, I thought Bud Dupree had a very good game yesterday. So as far as everything goes, I really thought that they were playing better. And I, you know, at this point, I think that's the best that they looked when you're looking at the first half. The second half, I don't know whether it was the fact that they were in cruise control, whether the fact that it was 30-10, and they were just trying to get the game moving and expiring in the clock. Maybe they were playing too much prevent, but they were getting exposed in the second quarter, the second half. So it was a tale of two halves. Do you think that the second half was more indicative of the problems of this team, or it was more indicative of just trying to go ahead and expire that clock, Tony?
I think it was more. I think they started playing more. I don't want to say prevent, but I think they started playing more zone. If I remember the announcer was saying correctly, I think they were playing more zone in the second half. And I think in the first half they were more active. And when this defense, going back to last year in Cleveland in week one, whenever it's more aggressive, it seems like more of a gang tackling mentality. I think it's a better defense. I think whenever they try to sit and play a little bit more passive, I think it shows in their play. So I think they just started to get a little bit more passive in the second half, and I think they need to be one of those defenses that is always aggressive, going after the quarterback and flying to the football.
What's the best grade if we go ahead and take our red pen out? What's the most honest, the most worthy grade that we could put on this defense and Keith Butler's boys?
I'm going to say B minus, simply because the way they responded after that first touchdown in the very first half, after the first quarter after Ben's interception, and the way they responded at the very end there, because it looked like they were falling apart. You know, the Bucks scored 17 straight points in the second half, and then they get the ball back again at the 20 with what, 3 minutes left, and the fours a three and out there. I think that moved them from a C plus to a B minus. So I'm going to give them a B minus for their efforts.
I was in the C plus range, and I'm finishing up the grade report. I'm probably going to keep it at a C plus, but that B minus does have a lot of merit. Let's switch back over to the offense. You know, I think our valedictorian is going to come from the offense. Yesterday, there's a lot of guys that you can go ahead and look at. Before we do that, let's look at the honor roll. So I'm thinking the first guy you're looking at on the honor roll was one of the greatest plays of the year so far, the stiff arm from hell, Vance McDonald, 75 yards. And I don't know if you saw this today, but the guy he stiff-armed, Chris Conte, is out for the season.
Really? No, I didn't.
So I don't know if it was a result of that play, but he is on injured reserve for the rest of the season. And that was the water cooler talk of the day, that stiff arm, and everybody is talking about it. Dropped my kids off at school. The principal wanted – he's not even a Steeler fan. He just wanted to talk about that stiff arm. Vance McDonald, when he is healthy, a man among boys. I have a good friend who's a Patriots fan, and he was like, that guy was Gronk-like out there, is what he said. And, you know, really, if you can compare – if you have a Patriots fan comparing Vance McDonald to Rob Gronkowski, that's a compliment as far as play goes. If you're talking about his bar-hopping ability, that's another thing. But if you're talking about how he played on the field in that play, yeah, that was good. And if you harken back to January in that Jacksonville game, Vance McDonald had 10 catches. He has a great rapport with Ben Roethlisberger. So for me, that tight end position is a whole lot better when you have Vance McDonald and Jesse James in different options to go to, and that even makes Ben better. So honor roll, we're going to put Vance on the honor roll. I'm going to put all the touchdown guys on the honor roll. You got to put Switz on there. Ryan Switzer, that was a tough catch. Ben, I mean, I didn't think he was actually going to catch that ball. Did you, Tony?
No, I'm surprised that he was able to hold on to it. The way he approached it, I thought going to squirt through his body as he was going out of bounds, but the fact that he held on to it was amazing.
Ben Cannon, that ball from short range.
Yeah.
That's like getting shot from close range with a gun. And to be able to hold on to that, I mean, that was pretty impressive. And then what can you say about Antonio Brown? Look at that. That pass play, he made that touchdown. He just made that guy miss. Then he turned on the jet. And that was probably one of the prettier short pass turned into a touchdown that I've ever seen from Antonio Brown. It was a very inspired route. It was very short, but he just made a miss, and then he turned it on, and you knew right away. You're like, there's no catch in this guy.
Yeah, I think it illustrates the chemistry between he and Ben, because I heard wrong, but I thought maybe it was a run option play too. But the guy was playing so far off, it was like stealing candy from a baby, as they say. It was just, you've seen those two hook up on that kind of play a lot over the years. So it was, and it just goes to show you with Antonio Brown, he doesn't need to do much to really help the team. He draws so much attention away from everybody else, and five catches, 60 yards, and a touchdown. That's we call that a bad game for most for him, but for most receivers, they would take it.
Yeah, and he's still among the leaders as far as targets and catches go. James Conner, a nice day as well. Only 61 yards on the ground, but he averaged a tad over 4 yards per carry. But if you look at you combine in the receptions, he had a 95-yard day. Pretty soon, you're really not even thinking about Le'Veon Bell anymore. Is he the dominant runner that Bell is? No, but with the way that this defense is, the way that this offense is playing, that he's very valuable, and you can go ahead and spread the ball around, and it makes him even more dangerous. But the guy we have to give valedictorian honors, there's no question. There's no question it's Ben Roethlisberger.
Absolutely. I mean, he was much more efficient than he was the week before. I mean, 30 of 38. I mean, you can't, for 353 and three touchdowns, you can't ask for more than that. And after that early interception, you're thinking, uh-oh, here we go. Road Ben, or Rusty Ben, whatever you want to call it. But the way he settled down, and he looked like 2008 Ben, the way he was, getting – I think it shows – it illustrates – the difference between him and a quarterback like Fitzpatrick, around the same age, one has really no mobility, and Ben, he's one of the greatest ever at doing what he does. I agree wholeheartedly with that pick.
So we got primetime Ben back yesterday. We've got so many versions of Ben. Now, we did miss a guy. We missed a guy on the offensive honor roll. And, it's funny because it's just getting to the point where every week I have Juju Smith-Schuster on the honor roll. This guy would be a wide receiver one on almost any other team, with the exception of maybe Atlanta with Julio, maybe with Tampa, because I love Mike Evans, what he's doing. And in fact, I actually think Juju's just so dangerous. I know AB makes him better, because it gives him more opportunities, but Juju Smith-Schuster is becoming one of the better receivers
in the entire National Football League and what he's accomplishing week in, week out. I mean, no touchdowns yesterday, but two big catches, one early in the game that was just that helped set up a score and that was just huge, and another one to end the game to close out Tampa when they needed it. Ben is going to Juju when he needs it. And, you know, it's funny, we talk about Antonio Brown. He's fine when they win, but he's not happy with his production when they lose. So, I mean, he wasn't complaining about the balls in the victory yesterday. And I think Juju is making life so much easier for that team when you're double covering a guy like Antonio Brown. You've got number one receivers on that team. So as far as that goes, you know, we got to give the offense. I mean, I'm giving the offense an A-. And the only reason I'm just giving them the minus, I thought the offensive line, granted, you have two starters out on the right side. DeCastro's out, Gilbert's out. I thought Filer and Finney, they held it together pretty well. They played well, but Ben was running for his life. But a guy that wasn't out but was getting victimized was Al Villanueva, and Jason Pierre-Paul was giving him problems all day long. So Ben could have got murdered there, and that was the biggest strike against the offense. I'll go ahead and say an A-. I was originally going to say a B+, but I'm gonna give him a little leeway on that. Tony, what are you saying?
Yeah, I'd say A-. I think it could have been better if not for the pick in the beginning, because I think that led to a touchdown for Tampa, and the way they sort of stalled a bit in the second half. I don't know. I think at one point they had about 60 yards over like a quarter and a half of the second half, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, I think, you know, if they would have been more efficient in the third quarter there, I think they could have put the game away quicker and not let Tampa Bay get back into it. But overall, I think it was the best that they've looked all year on offense.
Quickly, let's take a look at the special teams. I'm just going to throw out C. I don't think Jordan Berry's average was better, but I still thought his punting was shoddy. I think one of the reasons he's being kept around is because Chris Boswell with him and is more comfortable, but Chris Boswell's not kicking well right now either. Pretty soon, you're going to get tired of the misses. Today, you know, Mike Tomlin came out and said, hey, he's our guy. We're sticking with him. He's our guy. And I know they trust him. And I know last year there's about three or four. I mean, that could have been a 9-7 team without Chris Boswell last year. That's how many games that he won for them. And I have confidence in him, but it's waning now. And last week I'm sitting at the game, and he finally kicked an extra point. And the crowd had sarcastic cheering for him. And it's just to the point where you got to be like, what's going on with his head right now? Where is he? It's almost like he has Steve Blass disease. He's wild all of a sudden. I mean, two times hitting the right upright. I don't understand it. But I'm hoping that he gets that one big kick in the Ravens game that completely shocks his system back into the greatness that we've seen from him. But what do you think is going on with Boss?
I think it goes back to the Cleveland game, because you didn't see this. You didn't see any signs of this at any point of his career. And you certainly, not even in the preseason, he looked like his old self in the preseason. And then he missed that kick in overtime, you know, again, compensating for the weather. And I think once they get a bad experience, sometimes it stays with them. And like you said, he needs a big kick. He needs to make a big kick in a clutch situation. And I think that might turn him back around, because he's been too consistent throughout his 3+ years here for him suddenly to just lose it. It's not a health issue because he's booming the kickoffs right out of the end zone just about every time. So it has to be a mental thing, and it's affecting him mechanically. And I think he just has to figure out a way to get through that. And I think once he does, hopefully he'll be okay. But hopefully he'll figure it out before Mike Tomlin gets the itchy finger, because you know how coaches are. He's your guy 1 week, but he costs you a couple games. He's not your guy anymore.
Exactly. I had a buddy that went to the game yesterday. He said that it rained quite a bit before the game, just heavy rains, to the point that they were not even letting people drive into the parking lot. They just stopped you, and you couldn't go in, and said that that made the field very slick. So that could have been a part of it. And, you know, the special teams really nothing else really impressed me on special teams. It was just there. You know, they gave up that what could have been a backbreaker, DeSean Jackson's run back that was thankfully called back because of a hold. I don't really know how much that hold had to do with it, but, I mean, I thought he turned on the Jets and looked pretty good there, and I thought they got a break. But, you know, even though that didn't go against them, you know, when you're watching those courtroom dramas and they're like, well, you can strike that from the record. I can't strike it from the record, though. It's in my mind. I saw it happen, even though it's stricken. So I'm just going to say C- for the special teams with all of the problems all the way around. Really, the special teams are becoming a liability for this team, and I'm just going to leave it at that, Tony. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and listen to this message from Frank Walker, and we're going to continue on with the good, the bad, and the ugly, and finish up detention.
Smart or stupid? Those strobing lights in your rear view? That flashlight shining in your face?
License, registration, and insurance, please.
The little adventure you're about to have with this guy?
I'll need you to step out of the vehicle, please.
Okay, so you've done something stupid. Fix it with a smart move.
For DUI or criminal defense, call Frank Walker of frankwalkerlaw.com. He knows his way around a courtroom. 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805 or frankwalkerlaw.com.
For his PA office, once again, call 412-212-3878 or West Virginia 304-712-2089. You could also check out his website, frankwalkerlaw.com, to see how he can help you in your time of need. Frank Walker Law, real talk, real experience, real results. Now, let's finish up the grades. We talked about our valedictorian, which is Ben Roethlisberger. We talked about honor roll on offense. We'll throw in some more honor roll guys real quickly here, Tony. Would you agree with me if I threw in Bud Dupree and Terrell Edmonds as far as honor roll players? But another guy on defense that I want to talk about is John Bostic. Look, I know he's no Ryan Shazier. He's not going to do for you what Ryan Shazier could do, but I thought he's filled in that inside linebacker position very well, and I thought he had a very good game last night. Another guy I want to throw in is Mike Hilton. So those four guys,
yeah,
I would give honor roll status to as well. Is there anybody you think I'm missing?
Did you say Joe Hayden?
Oh,
I can't remember.
I almost forgot. And that is just, you know, that's unacceptable for getting Joe Hayden, because I got to tell you, Tony, we talked about, and this is something that I had written down that I wanted to discuss. We talked about at the beginning of our podcast tonight how we have found Ben Roethlisberger to be the most indispensable guy on the offense. If you take him away from this team, I don't know what you're going to do, because you don't want to lose a guy like AB, but you know you have a guy like James Washington and definitely a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster. We saw what happened when you take away Le'Veon Bell and you put in a guy like James Conner, you're still going to have results. But without Ben, you're going to have a huge drop-off. We saw the huge drop-off on the defensive side of the equation
with Joe Haden, and you see him back, and you just see what he can do. He is a leader on the field. He's a leader on the sidelines. He's a leader in the locker room. He had a huge hit yesterday that set the tone, jarring a short catch loose from Chris Godwin. I thought he was absolutely incredible yesterday. Joe Haden is so invaluable to that defense right now, so he definitely gets honor roll status. In fact, I think he is the guy that is stirring the drink on the defensive side of the ball, and he needs to stay healthy. So if you're looking at the indispensable players, I think you have to add Joe Haden as one of them. And last night, he really showed up to the point that I heard them talking on Sports Talk Radio today, and I was thinking it as well. If he's in that Kansas City game, it could be a completely different story.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's a coincidence that in the three games so far, the two that he has been in there, they look like the Steelers' defense of last year. You know, active, aggressive, a lot of pass defense. I mean, that the pass defense he had at the I think it was early in the second or maybe late in the first half where he reached around and knocked the ball out and I think it was third and five or third and goal from the five, and I think they had to kick a field goal. That was a big play for a game that came down, you know, a 3-point game. And you look at DeSean Jackson, you know, the numbers he put up the first 2 weeks, and he had three catches for 37 yards. You hardly, other than that punt return, you didn't even know he was there. So I don't think it's any coincidence that. He just makes his defense go. It's amazing. You know, they don't get enough credit for being aggressive last year and going out and picking him up and signing him right away. He's just a great addition to this team.
What a great signing. And he's also the guy that, you know, had higher offers elsewhere. But wanted to come to Pittsburgh and not really to punish Cleveland, but to have a chance to win all the time. He saw the culture twice a year and wanted to be a part of it. I absolutely love Joe Haden as a Pittsburgh Steeler. I wish he would have come here in 2010. That's how good I think that guy is. I think he's a perfect Steeler. As far as everything goes, you have to talk about him as a possible valedictorian. We gave it to Ben, but I would say that, you know, he's the runner-up in this situation. So as far as everything goes, we did our grades. You know, we're looking at an A-minus for the offense. You and I are you know, splitting hairs with a B-minus to a C-plus for the defense, and I just threw out a C-minus for the special teams. We're going to go to the phones right now. 732-266. This is a number that I recognize from last year. Great to hear old friends back on the hangover. Who do we have here?
Good evening, gentlemen. Vito from New Jersey. How are you?
Vito, welcome back. Good to talk to you in 2018, my friend. I'm glad to hear your voice. I was missing you the last couple of weeks, buddy.
I didn't realize what time you guys were on.
Okay. Yeah, We have moved to 9:30 this year. The day after the game, we had a slight change in the program to move back to the hangover format, just to give people, you know, a day to digest the game. Thought that would be a whole lot better. So what's on your mind, buddy?
I'm actually thinking yesterday. I guess you guys realized when you came down to that final drive where. I think it's 20. It's 30 to 20. Is it 30 to 22? Or 30 to 21? And they get the big touchdown to Mike Evans in the end zone. And I'm saying to myself, if Pittsburgh doesn't put it away in the next drive, these guys are going to come back and either tie or take the lead. And at the end of the game, I was thinking of the missed PAT by Boswell and then the missed field goal, which that game could have ended with Pittsburgh winning by a touchdown. It would have put more pressure on the other team to score a touchdown just to tie it and send it to overtime. The other thing my thoughts are on is Le'Veon Bell. Do you think this team could still operate all year round without him? because it just seems like some of the runs that Connor wasn't getting yesterday, Bell probably gets. I don't know. To me, I just feel that there's still a different team without him, that he could still add more value.
You know what? He does. He does add value, but to my point, he adds fracture to this team at this point. This is all. This has become a divorce. In fact, I'm not sure if we actually see Le'Veon Bell back this year. But for me, I would rather have a guy like James Conner in there with the added weapons you have around him. Where Tony made a comment earlier that I just love, and the comment was the fact where Ben used to check down to Bell, he's finding guys like Vance McDonald and Jesse James and James Washington and even Juju, and he's spreading the ball around a whole lot more, and they're so much more dangerous. So, he's a better runner as far as that goes, but I think you have more of a complete offense and a less predictable offense with James Conner in there as opposed to more predictability in a guy like Le'Veon Bell. Because, Tony, help me out with this. If you look back to the Jacksonville game, it was predictable what they were going to do in the running game against a good defense where they were just going to continue to go to Bell, and they were just snuffing it out just like that. Tony, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, there were two fourth and ones where they tried the pitch outs to Bell. I mean, they saw that coming from a mile away. So, yeah, I think it does. Look, if you – others have pointed this out, going back to 2015 with D'Angelo Williams, the offense has been extremely productive without Bell. And you can't take away with Bell the kind of back he is and what he brings to the table. I mean, I think that would be unfair to him. But there's no question that this offense has proven that it can function at a higher level without him. So, like you said, it's pretty much a divorce at this point. He doesn't want to come back. He doesn't want to be here. So I don't think what they're proving right now is they can get along without him.
You know, I would love to have him back. I would love to have an engaged Le'Veon Bell back, a guy that wants to be here. Would you agree in our assessment that they can do so many more things and be more diverse without him with the weapons that they have?
Well, I think they have no choice. I think they have to, right? Because I think they realize that they got to move away from him because, like you said, we don't know if he's coming back. There's a good chance he's not, so they have to stick with what they got. They got to use what they got. What about using some of that cap space now to bring in maybe a veteran player?
Where are you talking, a veteran running back, or are you talking somebody on the defensive side of the ball?
What do you think, on offense or defense? Where could we use help?
You know, I'm not sure. I was thinking since May that they would bring in a guy like Navarro Bowman, but I think at this point, on defense, a linebacker, I just don't think there's anybody really that they feel strongly enough that to bring in now, but they can take that cap money and roll it over into next year and really replace him then. So I don't know whether that's going to help them now, but they're scouting and I'm sure they're looking, and you know, there's trade possibilities, even though it's going to be very difficult to do, but there's a possibility of trading him. And you know, the New York Jets came up. And if you would trade a guy like Le'Veon Bell to the New York Jets, they're probably going to give you a draft pick and maybe a running back like Isaiah Crowell back in return. You might get a second round pick and a guy like Crowell. You or maybe you could convince them to give you a guy like Darren Lee
an inside linebacker, but that's probably a pipe dream at this point. But there's definitely possibilities. I just don't know on the open market if there's a guy on the couch right now that could come in and help this team. But believe me, I'm sure they're looking, and they know so much more than I do. So I'd like to see that happen and then use that cap space, but I don't know what the options are. But the good thing is that they will have a lot of cap space to go ahead and use next year, and this will help carry over. Am I correct in that thinking, Tony?
Yeah, I think if Bell remains here throughout the rest of the year, they accrue his weekly salary every game he misses. So I think they're better off just personally. I think they're better off just letting him sit out, and if he wants to come back in week 10, say, all right, you can come back, but you're going to be inactive the last 6 weeks, and just let him go next year. Because I wouldn't create another James Harrison scenario by releasing him. I mean, if you can get a trade for him, fine. The scenarios you laid out, that'd be perfect if they can do that. But otherwise, I would just let him do what he keeps doing. He's not being disruptive right now. He's just out down in Miami doing whatever he's doing. Let him keep doing that. There's no sense in just everybody wants them to, just cut him loose right now. Why? I mean, why do that? He's not here being a distraction. He's away. So, if you cut him now, you're just cutting off your nose to spite your face, because he's just going to go sign somewhere. And you're not going to get anything for him. So just let him sit out.
And you give him what he wants. You know, if you go ahead and if you just don't get rid of him, you at least get a 2020 third-round compensatory pick. And so they'll just take anything. And if they could trade him now for a third-round pick, a lot of people would be up in arms about that. But think about it. I would do it. I would take a third-round pick for 2019 right now at this point, or a second-round pick, and a veteran that somebody needs to dump, like a Crowell. To that point. So, Vito, I hope we answered your questions there, and it's so good to hear your voice again, my friend.
Gentlemen, thank you. Have a great evening. I appreciate all your feedback.
All right, thanks, buddy. We'll see you next week.
Got it.
All right. One of our Hall of Fame callers, Vito from New Jersey, great to hear from him. We're going to go ahead and wrap things up, and Tony, we're going to look forward. Big one next week, the Baltimore Ravens coming into town, and a lot of people didn't believe me when I said that I think this team is for real at the beginning of the season. I really think that this is a dangerous football team. Their red zone, they're 12-for-12 in the red zone so far this year with an even pass-run differential as far as touchdowns. 6 rushing touchdowns, 6 passing touchdowns. Flacco looks engaged. Some of the new guys they brought in, like John Brown, Crabtree, along with Alex Collins, who is still around, even Buck Allen, who's still there. And you have a guy like Justin Tucker that can kill you every time he lines up for a kick, even a 50-plus yarder in Heinz Field. This is going to be a crazy game. It's going to go down to probably a 3-point game again, like it always does. Where do you see it shaping out?
Oh, you hit the nail on the head as far as the improved Baltimore offense. I mean, they have talent now on the offense. There's no question about it. They don't have all pros. They definitely have enough talent there to do damage. And we know how things go between them and the Steelers. So there's no point in me predicting a blowout, because I know that's not going to happen. It's going to be, like you said, a 1-2-3-point game. And I think it could go a long way towards determining the paths of both teams next week, depending on what happens.
So what's your prediction for a score next week, Tony?
I'm going to go. I'd like for it to be 24-0, but I'm thinking to be another 24-23 type game. I'm going to go 24-23 Steelers.
All right, I'm not going to give the Steelers as many points as I've been giving them plus 30 the whole year. I'm thinking that this very easily could be a 17-13 game. I think it. I mean, it could be higher because we saw them do what was it 40-39 last year. Crazy. So I'm going to go ahead and say Steelers 29, Baltimore 26. Actually, Baltimore 27. Let's go 29-7. I've got to be optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm worried about this team next week. It's going to be a tough game, but if the Pittsburgh Steelers are who we think they are, they will win this game and end the first quarter of the season 2-1-1. So that's where I'm at. Well, we're going to wrap things up here today. Tony, as always, it's been a pleasure. I enjoy your insight. And I value all your opinions. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, you too, my friend. It was a pleasure as always. Go Steelers.
Go Steelers. So for Tony DeFeo, for Behind the Steel Curtain, Frank Walker Law, and also would like to thank our callers. We had Vito calling in, and we had Ken, both from New Jersey tonight, calling in. So it's great to hear from them. We want to hear from you next week. And as always, go Steelers. You've just been hung over with Behind the Steel Curtain. Good night.